compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Okie dokie karaoke. We are back. This is the third hour of the program. As you can see, it does go by very quickly. So if you'd like to call, call now. 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Let's get to Gary in... It's Indiana, I think. Gary in Indiana, welcome to the program.
Hi, Patrick.
Hi there.
It's Gary from Rumford, Rhode Island.
Rhode Island, I'm so sorry. Well, there is a Gary, Indiana, right. So maybe that's what I was thinking.
Right. Remember that song, Indiana Wants Me? Oh, I can't go back there.
I'm not familiar with that song. Sounds like it's crime-related.
And then at the end of the song, you would hear the police sirens wailing.
There you go.
It's pretty good. You know, it's one of those ones from the 60s. I forget who composed it. But anyway, my question, Patrick, if I may. A while ago, you mentioned a book by a Catholic author. I think it was in two volumes on predestination. And it wasn't Reginald... Garrigou-Lagrange.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't him, because I'm looking at both of his books now, well, at least two of them, online here, and one is only like 300 and something pages, and they're in paperback, both of them. But the one that you, the gentleman that you mentioned, mm-hmm. It was in a two-volume set, and I hope so bad that I was, you know, knew that was going to come up so I could have wrote his name down. Because I'm very much interested in the Catholic position.
Well, I'm drawing a blank on that. I'm trying to remember what two-volume book that might be. Now, obviously, the one by Father Garrigou-Lagrange is the one that I always recommend. And if there was a two-volume work, I'm just blanking on what it might be. I don't remember, honestly. Do you remember when I said this? Do you remember around what time of year it was?
Oh, it was maybe 6 months ago.
Okay. Here's how you can find out. And I mean, I would have to do the same thing. If you go to the show page, go to relevantradio.com/Patrick. In the search bar there, you can search for keywords. So predestination almost certainly would be the keyword to look for. And it will pull up every show where I've talked about predestination. And then can pinpoint it that way.
So go to the relevant radio page.
Well, here,
the search box.
Write this down. Yeah. Relevantradio.com/Patrick. You got to put that part on at the end. Okay. Once you're there
relevant
on the show
radio.
Page.
Say that again. I'm sorry. Relevant radio.
Relevantradio.com/Patrick. So if you put that in there, you're going to get, you'll see where the search bar is. And in the search bar, just type in predestination. And then that way, whatever show I talked about or any shows that I talked about predestination, it will pull it up. And then you'll see the show notes and then you'll be able to, at that point, you'll be able to pinpoint which show it was. And then call me back and let me know which two-volume work that was because I'm just going blank on it. I don't really remember. And now I'm interested. Thanks a lot. Appreciate the call, Gary. Let's go next to Patrick in Scottsdale, Arizona. Good morning, Patrick.
Hi, Patrick. Good morning. Thank you for taking the call.
Sure.
Question for you. I'd like to get your opinion on this.
Okay.
We're Catholic, and we would like to know how to address this with a nephew who is very sick. He's not Catholic. I'm not sure what denomination he is, but... Would you think it'd be okay or a good idea to say, hey, we're praying the rosary for you, or we're praying to our Blessed Mother, or to one of the saints? So you think that just would be like a unnecessary point of contention with him and just say we're praying for him? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, depends on what you want to accomplish. If you want to provoke a follow-up question like, well, why are you praying to Mary? Why don't you just pray to God? And you want to have that conversation, sure. If that's not your objective and you just simply want him to know that you're supporting him in prayer, you could say it however you wanted. But if you mention the rosary or Mary and he's not Catholic, chances are he's going to ask about that or maybe even respond negatively to that. So that could be a good opportunity to evangelize him, but it really depends upon what you want to accomplish, you know.
Okay. I guess ask God to kind of lead us and see how we should go with it.
Yeah.
I guess a follow-up to that. Thank you. I guess a follow-up to that would be, too, as a Catholic, if you were to come across this situation, I'm thinking about how a Protestant might say this, come across somebody who's dying, a Protestant probably would say, do you accept Jesus as your Lord and Savior? If, as mm-hmm. a Catholic, you come across someone who's dying, regardless of what that person's beliefs are, how would you say yeah. that to them? What would you?
I would say, you know, are you ready to meet God face to face? Are you sorry for your sins? You know, God loves you. Jesus died on the cross for you. He wants to save you, but he won't save you against your will. So if you love him and you want to die in the state of grace so you can go to heaven, now's the time to act. Would you like me to have a priest come to, I mean, if the person is Catholic, or you say if he's not a Catholic, I would say, would you like me to baptize you? I can baptize you right now if you would like baptism. And
okay.
if he said yes, I would baptize him then and there. I mean, if death okay. is imminent, but if he's, you know, been diagnosed with terminal cancer, he's got 6 months to live, it doesn't have to be that hasty. But if it looks as though the person could die at any time, I would offer baptism. And I did that once. I actually, with this one woman, I'll tell you the story. She was not a Catholic. She was quite elderly, and my wife befriended her. I think they started talking in the grocery store or something like that. And so she... very nice lady. She was very intrigued with our family. She never married herself, and she was raised in a nominally Protestant home, but she had never been baptized. She was not really much of any church-going person. And so here she is now in her late 70s, and she would come to Mass with us. So Nancy would invite her, would you like to go to Christmas Mass with us? Would you like to go to Easter Mass with us? And she would. She would sit there. Her eyesight wasn't so good, but she loved the music and she loved, you know, seeing all the colors and the people and all that. And so she, at every opportunity, she would say yes to going to Mass with us. And when it got close to the time that we could tell that she was going to be dying, she was into her 80s at this point, I asked her over the course of some years, I asked her probably 3 or 4 separate times, Shirley, would you like to be baptized? You know, you enjoy going to Mass. You'd be able to receive Holy Communion. And I would explain to her what baptism would do. It would wipe away all of her sins. She'd be ready to meet God when the time came. And she was always very polite about it. She said, no, thank you. I love going to Mass with you guys, and I enjoy this, but I don't want to be baptized. And after about the fourth time I asked her, and I got the same answer, I didn't ask her anymore. And one day she died. And she died without baptism, which made me very sad. But who knows? Maybe there was some spark of a conversion at some point before she died. But I wouldn't be shy about asking a non-Catholic, are you ready? And if you want to make sure you're ready, I can help you, you know?
Okay, and thank God for divine mercy, too.
Indeed. Yes, indeed. And pray the divine mercy,
Chaplain. Thank you.
You got it. Thank you.
Thank you for your ministry, Patrick.
Thanks. We're going to go to Nora in Sun City, Arizona now. There's a Sun City, California, but this is the other Sun City. Good morning, Nora.
Oh, good morning, Patrick. Love you and always listen to you. But it was
Thank
interesting
you.
Listening about World War II because mm-hmm. my husband was in 9 countries and he's here with me. He's 102 next month.
Oh,
I mean,
wow.
And he was injured in Germany. He was in the army, and many things happened. He was in coma, and he went into France hospital, and then sent up to England. And Patton said, "Everybody who can walk and move out." So he went on the boat over to the Battle of the Bulge. So today, yesterday, when we were looking at the thing on TV, the show of the war. It was amazing to think I'm watching history, and here he's sitting beside me, and we're watching this together. And
wow.
he was in there, and I said to him, "What did you do?" And he said, "Well, we dug in," and he said, "We were alone, we were wet, we were this, we were that, but we prayed a lot." He said, "I prayed a lot." But anyway, I just want to share with you, we were told he was one of the oldest double World War II soldiers in our area right now, and he does suffer from the frozen, you know, he had frozen feet and frozen hands. I just want to share that it's amazing that God gave us the chance that we could look back and see what all these soldiers went through, these bodies floating in the water and jumping off the boat, and they weren't prepared really, you know, 4,000 were massacred and he was in that group. It's like a miracle for me and unreal at the same time.
Yeah, that sounds like an amazing, you've got living history at your fingertips there. I think you mentioned that you watched, or did I hear incorrectly, that you were watching Saving Private Ryan with your husband? Is that right?
No, I was actually watching on Fox, I believe, the real films that the old films they found, and they were showing the actual war. I'm watching where he really was.
I believe it. So here's my suggestion. If you think that if you think he's up to it, and he may not be, and I could understand why if he isn't, just in terms of the emotions, but there is a series called Band of Brothers, and it's, I forget which airborne, it's Easy Company in, maybe it's 101st Airborne, I don't know, but they're paratroopers who go in to Normandy on D-Day. And they go from there to what I think is the Battle of the Bulge, but you see this dramatized where they're in the snow, you know, this deep, cold, frigid, snowy Germany, and they're freezing to death, and they get through it and they win. So maybe that would be something if your husband is up to it, but the quality of some of these movies, and in that case, the series, is just so amazing that you feel like you're there. And although I've never come anywhere near a war, I feel as though these movies help us understand what these men go through. Thanks so much. I really appreciate hearing from you, Nora. Thank you. And my respect and best wishes to you and your husband. 888-914-9149. Cyrus, I know you, like I, you've never served in the military. But when you see a movie like that, say Saving Private Ryan or one of those other movies where it's historically accurate and it's not superheroes with jets and lasers and stuff, it really does, for me, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but for me, I'm assuming probably for you too, you get a sense of what it would be like if you actually had to do that.
Yeah, and I think that's why I stay away from, I'll watch them once and I just have to stay away from it. It's too much.
Does it upset you?
Yeah, it makes it turns my stomach just thinking about knowing. I mean, these men knew they weren't going to make it.
Yeah,
and they're like, but this is the right thing to do, and to sacrifice themselves for that. And then if you did live through it, you have that with you every day for the rest of your life.
My dad and I used to watch war movies when I was, a teenager, and he liked them. But as he got older, I noticed kind of a shift in his attitudes. And maybe it's because some of the later movies, you know, with the higher quality of production, were more realistic compared to, let's say, what you might have seen in the 50s or 60s. And he lost his appetite for those. He says, I don't really want to see that. He said, I don't want to see the reality of what happened. And I said, well, Dad, you used to like war movies. And he said, yeah, but these are a little too realistic. These are a little too much. So I can understand that. Who do we have next on the phone, Cyrus? Ed in Vallejo, California. Welcome to the program.
Glad to speak to you, sir. Hope everything's going good for you.
Thank you.
My comment about the war is, I think it's going to be done not with weapons or anything, which is good. I think they're going to do like when they shut down the infrastructure. That's going to be the thing, because that causes all kinds of chaos.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody's going to be like, so I believe that's the next warfare. It isn't going to be fought with weapons. It's going to be fought with technology. That's the way it's going to be fought. That is my feeling.
Have you noticed that there is an uptick in the ransomware attacks? We had it most recently on the gas pipeline. Then we had it on the meat industry, things of that nature. And I wonder if those are sort of like probes or tests to see what a full-scale attack might be like, you know?
I agree with that, yeah. You know, what do you, if you should, you know, look, when the COVID thing came, I went to go to Costco to get some, and they just, everything grabs it. Nobody thinks about other people. It's just panic, you know, panic buying everything, you know. So I think that's just my opinion. So I'll leave it at that. And you and your family, many blessings to you, okay?
Thank you. I appreciate that very much. Thank you. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. Yeah, it's, you know, the whole idea of warfare, of course, is terrifying just to imagine. But there will be, you know, if we do get into it with somebody, and I hope we don't, there will be new ways of fighting a war, as our last caller was pointing out, and that could involve, let's just say, the internet goes away, or let's just say the power gets turned off. An EMP is something from time to time. If you do any research online, you see lots of videos and articles and things like that about an electromagnetic pulse that would be set off by exploding a nuke way up high in the atmosphere. Not that the nuke itself would do any direct damage, but the electromagnetic pulse that it would set off, everything within a line of sight would be fried. All the electrical components would be fried. So your phone, inoperable. Your television, your car, for that matter, inoperable, because all of these components would be fried by the EMP. And something as simple as that could bring a whole country to its knees is just an unthinkable thing. But we have to think about these things because we live in that era. Well, let's see. We also live in a time where we have to take breaks. We will do that now and come right back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. My number is 888-914-9149. I'll be right back. The programming you hear throughout the day on the Relevant Radio Network is sponsored in part by Christendom College. More info at getprinciples.com. We thank them for supporting Relevant Radio.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, we are back. A little cake music for you there. 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Let's go to a young man named Thomas. Good morning, Thomas. Welcome. You're in San Diego, right?
Hi. Yeah.
Okay. What's on your mind?
I was thinking if Adam and Eve had belly buttons because they didn't have any parents.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Now, do you know what makes the belly button, you know, do you know why you have a belly button?
The umbilical cord.
Exactly. You're 8 years old, I was told. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. So the umbilical cord, which gets cut off when the baby's born, that's what goes from the baby's body to the mother's body. And so while the baby's in the mom's tummy before the baby's born, that's how the baby gets all the food and oxygen and all those good things, right? So since Adam and Eve did not have parents, there would not be any need for a belly button because they didn't have an umbilical cord, right? He's getting coached by mom. So, Thomas, do you see what I'm saying? In other words, there would have been no need for them to have a belly button because they didn't have an umbilical cord because they were not born from their moms. God created them directly. You see?
Yeah.
Yeah. So my answer would be no, they did not have umbilical cords. Everyone else did, but they didn't. What do you think, Thomas?
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. And hey, here's a bonus parting gift for you. There's actually a book by that very title. It's called Did Adam and Eve Have Belly Buttons? And it's a book of questions that young people ask, and this is one of them. So maybe when you're 8 years old, you could probably read that book. You might need to be a little bit older, but maybe your mom can look for that book and get it for you. So when the time comes, you can read more answers to questions like that. Sound good? Okay. All right. Great. Well, good to talk to you. Thank you. Let's go now to Han listening in New York. Good morning, Han.
Hi, Patrick.
Hello.
I have a question relating to buying stocks and selling stocks for short terms, and would that consider Morrison?
No, I don't think it would be. Is it? I suppose it could be if you're buying and selling stocks and making a profit on something that is immoral. So, you know, that might be one thing to keep an eye out for. But just in general, to buy and sell stocks is not considered immoral, no. What would make you think that it would be?
I don't know, because I thought it would consider like gamble, since I'm not doing long term. But if I buy something and I know I'm going to make profit, I don't want to wait it for long term, I would just sell it. Or even sometimes I buy it within a day and I see it and make so much profit, I would just sell it. And I'm not sure that's been bothering me, because I thought I've been doing mortals and...
Okay. Well, let's walk through this together then, Hun. So when you're evaluating an action and you want to determine whether or not it's moral or immoral, sometimes it can be a little bit, a little murky. It's not always as clear, but most of the time it's pretty clear. And what you do is you triangulate using three sources. One would be the act itself. The other would be your intention. And then the third would be the circumstances. And you apply this test to an action, and if one or more of those comes up with the wrong answer, one or more of those sources of the act is bad, then you don't want to do it. So let's look at this. So the act itself, the act of buying something, even if you're not going to keep it for a long time, and you're going to sell it and you're going to make a profit. We do that with our homes. We do that with other things that we might buy, and we can do it with stocks, for example. So there's nothing inherent in the act itself that is immoral, okay? The second would be your intention. Now, are you intending to do something that you know is immoral or unethical? And I'm going to put words in your mouth and say, no, you're not. You're intending to build up your savings account or to be in a position to leave money for your children or help poor people or what have you. You have your priorities that involve saving some money, and this is one way to get that money that you can save. Or maybe you need an operation, or maybe you want to help a neighbor who is out of work. I mean, there could be any number of intentions, but I'm pretty confident that you don't have any immoral intention in doing this. Stop me if I'm wrong, okay? And then the third source, okay, so then the third source would be the circumstances. Are you trading on the black market? No. Are you doing something that's illegal? No. Are you doing something in the circumstances that in some other way involves immorality? No. So if the act itself is morally neutral and your intentions are good and the circumstances are at least morally neutral, then no, you're not committing a sin. And if you're worried about the temporariness, that I'm going to buy this and have it for 90 days and then sell it and make a profit, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, the duration of time, it's not as though it becomes moral versus immoral if you hold on to something for a year versus 90 days or something. That wouldn't affect it at all. I mean, if you could buy something and sell it a minute later and make a profit, that's pretty amazing, but you're not doing anything immoral. You see?
Okay. All right. Now I feel better.
Okay. Now, one other little thing here. Just remember to always pay attention to your conscience. And it doesn't sound like you need to be reminded of this, but maybe some people listening do. If your conscience bothers you and you're thinking, I don't think I should do this, or I'm not sure if I should do this, well, follow your conscience and listen to it and then get informed, which is what you're doing right now, which is great. We all have to follow our conscience, but we also have the obligation to have a properly formed conscience. So from time to time, people might worry about something that they find out later, oh, I didn't have to worry because that's not sinful. But more often than not, Han, what happens is people are bothered by their consciences and they don't listen. And they try to suppress that little voice that's saying, don't do that, or I shouldn't have done that, or I should have done this and I didn't do it. And we human beings are good at suppressing our conscience if we, you know, if we don't like the message that it's giving us. So I just want to applaud you because you, maybe unlike a lot of other people, you're listening to your conscience and you're trying to have a well-formed conscience, which says a lot of good about you.
All right. Thank you, Patrick.
You're welcome. Thank you. 888-914-9149. If you want to give me a call, we have phone lines open right now. 888-914-9149. You can also send me a message on Twitter. My address there is at Patrick Madrid. It's interesting that somebody just sent me a note on Twitter and said, hey, I sent you an email. I'd like you to read it on the air. And it hasn't come in. So if you want to send me an email, the easiest way to do it is go to relevantradio.com/Patrick, and you can send me an email that way. You'll see a link that it says to email me. That's relevantradio.com/Patrick. Let's get back to the phones. Let's go to Jorge in, is it San Diego? Is that right, Jorge? Welcome.
Hey, good morning, Patrick.
Good morning.
My question is, I'm sorry. My question is, my mother used to buy candles from the store, and I'm Catholic, 100% Catholic. Okay. My mother was Catholic too. Mm-hmm. But, and my mother had a CDO, and she would light the CDO and use a candlestick and would light the CDO and would bless the candles that she bought at the store. Is that transferable? Is that all right?
Did she use to bless the candles with?
No, the CDO, you know, the big candlestick, the big CDO. I don't know.
Like what you would use at mass to light a candle?
Exactly, that big, mm-hmm. Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it was blessed because my mother had families, priests and whatever, and they blessed it. Mm-hmm. Is that, can you do that or no?
Sure, you can use that to light a candle with. There's no problem with that. And if that itself was blessed by a priest, okay, that's great. That makes it a sacramental. But her lighting those candles with that doesn't make those blessed candles. So if that's what she was thinking, now she didn't do anything wrong. She was being pious, you know, that's good.
Right.
But it didn't, see, lay people can't bless an object like a rosary or a Bible or anything like that and make it a blessed item. Only a priest can do that. Well, deacons can do that too, but only someone with holy orders can do that. But if it made her feel more prayerful or if it made her feel more special, that's fine. It didn't hurt anything.
No. Yeah, not necessarily made it feel special because we have an altar and she had an altar. She passed away 5 months ago, but she had an altar with Jesus Christ and Mary. Mm-hmm. And she would light the candle and she would pray the rosary. But I get it. Yeah. So yeah, it's all right. So she would have to go to a priest to get those candles blessed and make it legit, basically.
Yeah, but yes, but she wasn't doing anything illegitimate. In other words, she wasn't doing anything wrong. She was expressing her piety in the way that she thought best at that time, and there was nothing wrong with it. All I'm saying is that objectively speaking, if you handed me your rosary and I blessed it, so to speak, made the sign of the cross, and even if I said the same words that the priest would say, it's not a blessed object, you know, because lay people don't have the power to do that. Priests do. So that's all. But it's not as though she was doing anything wrong.
So the CDO, the big candlestick, does not transfer even though it was blessed, it doesn't transfer the blessings, right?
So, no,
because I want to keep that pious belief, you know, and light the candle and the altar and thinking of my mother and Jesus Christ and Mary and you know. So
it's a very nice thing to do, and I can only imagine. And by the way, may your mother rest in peace. I can only imagine that it would bring you some comfort. Because she used to do that, and you love her, and you miss her, and so yes, I mean, I think it's entirely fine. since you're asking my opinion, I was only saying the bit about how lay people can't bless an object the way, for example, a priest can. That's all. But you're not doing anything problematic.
Thank you, Patrick. No, well, that's comforting. Thank you.
You're most welcome. Yeah, may your mother rest in peace. And I pray that the Lord will give you consolation as time wears on. Usually that's how things go. Thank you. Let's go now to Joe in Brooklyn. Good morning, Joe. Welcome.
Good morning, Patrick. How are you today?
I am well, sir. Thank you.
Because, you know, I know that you're not supposed to be asking Patrick how he's doing today. Because, yeah, many people might have asked you that question. here's my situation, and it's like a moral situation of my own.
Okay.
I'm married now 21 years. And the last four of my years that I'm married to my wife, she and I, we're basically living together and we're co-parenting.
Okay.
So I had an affair, so this is a big deal. So my affair went on for about 6 months. It was someone I worked with. And if I put myself in a position where, in order to try and save my marriage, I quit my job. I cut ties with a lot of people, and including family, in order to try and secure my marriage. So I went through the RCIA. And I know this is just a loaded question because there's a lot of details behind it. So I went through RCIA just to get married because this is the woman that I loved, and I wasn't a practicing anything. I mean, the only person who brought Christ to me was my grandma, my nanny. Mm-hmm. She brought Christ to me. She brought me the first time, like I was 8 years old, and she introduced me to Jesus. And she would have a cake on Christmas Eve, happy birthday to Jesus. And my father would look at her like, Elizabeth, she's crazy. And I'm like, mm-hmm. that's my grandmother.
That's fascinating. Get back to the situation with your wife, though. You started to tell me about your co-parenting. So, for the last four years, you're living together, but you're not living. I mean, clarify that for me. So you're living together, but you're not living as man and wife?
Basically putting on an act for our kid. And okay. I love my wife dearly. I mean, I'm not faking it. So here's my scenario is, when she threw me out, that's when I found Jesus Christ. When I was sitting on the steps of St. Patrick's Church here in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn,
mm-hmm.
I was sitting there about 2 o'clock in the morning. I could not stop praying. And the days have melded into a fact of that's now part of my day. I've never prayed as much as I have in the last 4 years in my entire life.
Praise God.
Amen. And now the situation is my wife doesn't believe me on my faith. She doesn't believe me when I, and she says faith is a very personal thing. Well, it's not. If you were born into it, you were born Catholic. It's now
right.
You're Catholic.
So what is, I know you're spiraling into the drop zone. Give me the cash value here, Joe.
Okay, here's my situation. I would love to save my marriage or at least prove to my wife that my faith is real. And I'm doing everything and anything possible. Sometimes I do nothing at all because, you know, that's what therapy tells me to do. And there's nothing really saving me or saving her, in fact, because I would love to just heal her broken heart. So I'm looking for advice. I'm not looking for actually ask you a question and looking for a very plain black and white answer because I know there's no real answer to it.
Yeah, that's a good way to begin because realistically speaking, given everything that's happened, this sounds like it's just going to take a long time. Maybe it won't be so long. Maybe things will get better sooner. They often do. But I think just given the circumstances, there's really nothing you can do. You know, live your faith.
Yeah.
Be genuine. Let her see over and over and over and over again that you are now a man of integrity, a man of your word, and you know, all it's going to require just a period of time, it seems to me, Joe, in which she will realize that you are changed. You know, that you're different. And how long that will take, I don't know. That's part of that's part of the purgatory that you're in right now. Is you just don't know how long that will take. But
I know that I'm praying the right way. I know I am. You know, I listen to, I've been in church many a time. I know I'm saying, you know, and I get personal with God too, as if he's sitting next to me in the car all the time. And he also catches my grief too. If I'm having a bad day, I'm pretty much giving my grief to God as well. Say, why is this traffic? Why is this? Why is that? you know. Mm-hmm. And that's, I guess that's the problem when you work alone. You get to talk a lot to yourself.
Yeah. I get to talk for 3 hours every day. And it's nice for me because I know some people are listening. Well, Joe, my advice would be ask St. Joseph to pray for you and ask him to help you become like he was. You know, he was a model of fatherhood. He was a model husband. He was very humble. He, you know, all of the things that are that pertain to St. Joseph would be very pertinent to you. I mean, any man, any husband. But in your particular situation, ask St. Joseph to pray for you that you will become a husband and a father the way he was. And I think that can only help you. Pray the rosary every day if you're not already doing that. I would say pray the rosary every day. A very powerful spiritual tool that you can use. Pray for your wife. Show her however you can. Just show her. And it seems to me that maybe the biggest danger that you've got to guard against would be impatience. Because if you're impatient and you want things to change and they got to change, how come they haven't changed yet? That could drive her crazy, you know?
Yeah. I think St. Joseph is definitely the way to go. I pray to St. Joseph the worker every day. And my son's name is Joseph. And we're really big on him, you know? And
good.
I appreciate
it. Yeah, he won't let you down. He won't let you down, Joe. I know it's a tough situation, but what did Jesus say? He said, for man, this is impossible, but with God, all things are possible, including the healing of your marriage. Have you and your wife looked into maybe a marriage encounter weekend? Maybe getting away for a weekend and kind of resetting, hit the reset button?
I want to promote right now, big time, RetroVi.
Yep.
Big deal. Big deal. We did it in Mesa, Arizona, and it worked for about 13 days straight. But it was a situation where the follow-up meetings, people were not being real with themselves. And it really upset me because I heard some of their stories and their backstories and where they're from and what happened, why they had their falling out and why they're at RetroVi. And I'm listening to their stories. And then while they're participating in these meetings, I'm like, wow, these folks are not being real with themselves. And that's how I felt. But the people running the meeting, they were amazing. They were, and I would suggest that to anyone, even if you have a healthy marriage, go to RetroVi, because you'll find somebody, or find something out about yourself that you didn't know, or find out something about your spouse you didn't know. And it can only help you grow.
Yeah. Yeah. And RetroVi, for those who are not familiar, thank you, Joe. RetroVi is a program for couples whose marriages are on the brink of disaster, or they're just absolutely falling apart. They specialize in couples in that situation. Marriage Encounter, although Nancy and I never went on a marriage encounter, we've known tons of people who have, and they've really enjoyed it and benefited from it. So that's just another suggestion for those out there who might like to, you know, have a happier, more real marriage. A lot of marriages, they suffer from neglect over time. And that would be one way to help to revitalize it. Again, thank you, Joe. I appreciate it. 888-914-9149. Break time. And we're going to come back with more of your phone calls right after this. You're listening to The Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
Sarah, so you remember we were talking in the last couple of days last week about cold cases and how DNA evidence can revive a cold case and actually solve some crimes. Remember those stories?
I do. Very fascinating.
I got a new one for you. Yeah, I like these stories. I mean, they're grim because they deal with murders and things, but
also
I'm happy
science.
Science. That's right. Well, check this out. This is from CNN. Almost 50 years later, Illinois police have made an arrest in the death of a teen who was found stabbed multiple times. Barry Lee Welpley, 76 years old. of Moundsview, Minnesota, was arrested on the 2nd of this month for a 1972 killing of a young girl, 15-year-old girl, Julie Ann Hansen. She had borrowed her brother's bicycle to go to a baseball game, and she never returned. So when they started searching for her, they found her body lifeless in a field nearby with multiple stab wounds. This is of the Naperville Police Department. Chief Robert Marshall said this horrific crime has haunted this family in this community and this department for 49 years. The investigation and resulting charges were truly a team effort that spanned decades, and I could not be more proud of the determination and resourcefulness of our investigators, both past and present, who never gave up on Julie. So what happened was a suspect in the case was not immediately identified, but he has been identified since then. After 49 years of continued investigation, authorities were led to an arrest through technological advancements in DNA and genetic genealogy analysis. Chief Marshall said this was never a cold case for our police department. We were all conscious of Julie's murder and looking for her killer. We had Julie's picture on our desks and investigations for all these years. At the time of her killing, Welpley was 27 years old and lived within a mile of her home. The police chief said he couldn't yet get the specifics out there as to how exactly they did this, but they did it through DNA and they were able to match it. And this guy probably, I'm assuming, he probably thought he had escaped. You know, roughly 50 years went by. They haven't caught me. He's 76. So he's not going to live, you know, who knows how much longer he would live, but I bet you he thought that he got away with it. So it makes me happy to see the advances that we've made in terms of DNA testing so that we can solve some of these crimes. I like that. Now, I know I should know what that is. Is that Stranger Things? Or
that
what is
that? Law and Order.
Oh, Law and Order.
Yeah, okay. I was just looking for a silly TV show sound effect. Didn't work.
Do you watch Law and Order?
No, I don't watch any of this stuff. Okay.
Because you know what I'm doing while you're watching TV.
You're reading
the Bible. Now, this one, you might want to pay attention to this one, Cyrus, real quick before I go back to the phones. Technology Review, which is a publication that's put out by MIT, they're giving you tips on how to stop artificial intelligence from recognizing your face in selfies. The company they're referring to here is called Clearview, and it has already supplied U.S. law enforcement agencies with a facial recognition tool trained on photos of millions of people scraped from the public web. Anyone with basic coding skills can now develop facial recognition software, meaning there is more potential than ever to abuse technology in everything from sexual harassment and racial discrimination cases to political oppression and religious persecution. So a number of artificial intelligence researchers are pushing back and developing ways to make sure that AIs can't learn from your personal data. Two of the latest examples are being presented this week at a leading AI conference. Emily Wenger of the University of Chicago, she says, I don't like people taking things from me that they're not supposed to have. So she and her colleagues have developed a tool called F-A-W-K-E-S, like Guy Fawkes. She says, we had this idea. What they do is it's referred to as data poisoning. It sounds gruesome, but it's not. What the data poisoning software does is that it will deliberately pollute a data set with fake examples, and that makes it harder, if not impossible, for these artificial intelligence systems to identify things. So an example of this in Fox is they make tiny changes to an image that are hard, if not impossible, to spot with the human eye. But it will completely throw off an AI, so they won't be able to identify who the person is in the photo. So these things are now beginning to hit the market. The Fox, that tool was already downloaded nearly 500,000 times from the website. And one user also has built an online version, making it even easier for people to use. If you want to use something like this, you would just simply run your photographs through it, rendering them impossible for artificial intelligence to recognize. So there you have it, Cyrus. In case you were wondering, now you have a new tool at your disposal. Let's go to Mike in Rockland, California. Good morning, Mike. Welcome. Hi, Mike. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes. Welcome.
Okay. My question is, where does the obligation to go to Mass on Sunday every Sunday. Where does that come from? The church's obligation.
Mm-hmm, yeah, the Sunday obligation to go to Mass. Well, it really comes from the early church, even to the time of the apostles. We're told that the Christians gathered on the day of the Lord, Sunday, and they would gather for what we would call the Mass. So the custom, the practice, dates all the way back to there. And we see in the Didache, I believe, that would be, say, early 2nd century, a reference to that. We see it in the Church Fathers who comment on this custom of going to Mass on Sunday. If you're asking me, like, at what point was it formally made an obligation, off the top of my head, I don't know. But I can tell you where you can find out. If you Google Dies Domini, so the first word, this is a Latin phrase, it means the day of the Lord. So Dies Domini, D-O-M-I-N-I. That is Pope John Paul II's document. I forget now whether it was an encyclical. I don't remember what type of document it was, but he wrote this about the church's custom and discipline of Mass on Sunday. But it's very rich in the theology and the scriptural basis for it. And it's fascinating reading in any case. He also talks about how to keep holy the Lord's Day. So I'd have to go back and reread that, but I think there he identifies how this custom passed into law. And I think that's what you're looking for, right?
Yes. We were at a men's group this morning, and it came up, and one of the gentlemen said, oh, it's kind of interesting. Our church has some things that are kind of interesting. And where does that come from? So mm-hmm. I thought, oh, I'll call Patrick.
Yeah. So you can say, A, that it's rooted in Scripture. It's testified to in the early church documents that we possess. It's referred to, so we know it was being practiced. And as with some other things, it became the law, even though there was no such thing as canon law per se in the first few centuries of the church. Nonetheless, the church did require certain things. I'll give you an example. So in Acts chapter 15, we see this first council of the apostles gathering in Jerusalem. And when the council was over and everything was, you know, had been decided about whether or not you had to become Jewish first and be circumcised in order to be a Christian, what about eating food that had been forbidden and such? These are all things that were discussed and settled upon. Well, when this was over, we're told that the apostles and the others, they were sent out. And here's what we read in Acts chapter 15, beginning of verse 27. So we are sending Judas and Silas, who will also convey the same message by word of mouth. It is the decision of the Holy Spirit and of us not to place on you any burden beyond these necessities, namely, to abstain from meat sacrificed to idols, from blood, from meats of strangled animals, and from unlawful marriage. If you keep free of these, you will be doing what is right. Farewell. So here we see an early example of the church promulgating a law, or in this case, a series of laws, something that would, you know, much later kind of pass into the realm of what we think of as canon law. But there you see the church exercising authority to bind and loose and binding the Christians of that time to these certain restrictions. So I hope that helps, Mike. I appreciate it. Excuse me. We'll go now to, let's see, I think we're going to go next to Nancy in Kimball. No, I'm sorry, Nancy in St. Cloud, Minnesota. Good morning, Nancy. Welcome.
Hi. My question is about preachers saying that the Catholic Church is an occult, and why is it, you know, they say they hear from God, and God's doing all this stuff. How is it that they don't know that Jesus instituted the Catholic Church?
Because they probably
all these people broke.
All how is it that they don't know? Go ahead.
Huh?
I'll let you finish, Nancy.
I was going to say, if they're so close to God and they're hearing from God all the time, it's how can't they see? Just look back in history that Jesus brought us the Catholic Church, and they're the ones who split off, and yet they're out there bad mouthing the Catholics.
Mm-hmm. Well, how did they not know? And that's because they've never met a Catholic who has explained it to them. That's the simple reason. They only know what they've been told. And if they've never had a Catholic presentation on the facts of history, which is part of it, they don't know. So if anything, I would say this is all the more of an example of why we need relevant radio. Because if those folks are willing to listen to the presentations here, even just to satisfy their own curiosity, they're going to learn quite a bit more than what they already know. Did you have another point, Nancy?
Well, I was just thinking, you know, they have such big organizations and stuff, and maybe because of all the money they're making, too, that they don't want to give up on it.
Maybe. Maybe so.
Yeah.
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 Well, anyway,
this
is a good reason to put the relevant radio bumper sticker on your car. That way, when people are driving around, they'll see that and maybe they'll tune in. Never know what will happen. Well, let's see. We're going to be doing this again 21 hours from now, tomorrow. In the meantime, I will be praying for you. Please pray for me. God bless you. See you tomorrow.
Come on, do it. Listen now! Listen to the Patrick Madrid Show!